Good morning, members. The committee will come to order, and we have two items for the agenda today. One is to hear House File 1080. But before we do that, I've also, members, you'll notice in your packet, we passed out a quick little survey for members. This will be our almost last official hearing for, at least for the foreseeable future, in this session. You never know. We do have a hearing scheduled on April 21st, which will be a joint hearing with our Finance Committee and then also with the Senate Omnipresent K-12 Committee. That's where they combine their policy and their Finance Committee over in the Senate. So the three committees will meet together on April 21st. We're going to have a presentation from the Education Commission of the State, the National Education Policy organization that's headed by that's chaired by a number of governors across the state. And so there are national experts and leaders and researchers and thought leaders on education policy, and we're going to hear a presentation from them on both the ins and outs of the federal stimulus act relative to K-12 education, and then also a presentation on high-stakes testing and the use of high-stakes testing. Probably something that will be primarily brand new information for the Senate, but I have to say our House and our committee jumped on that issue earlier this year. We heard some very good testimony. However, I think there are good things to learn from our engagement with ECS. And that's an 8:30 meeting, is that right? And so we'll get back to you with particulars as we get closer to April 21st. I think we do need to adopt minutes. I'm wondering if someone could move the minutes of April 2nd.
Chairman Mariani, I move the minutes of April 22nd.
Thank you. Representative Zepke moves adoption of the minutes of April 2nd. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, as I mentioned in your packet, there's a quick three-question sort of wrap-up survey. And attached with that, rather included with that, are just very brief notes reflecting the committee's reflection. At the beginning of this session, if you remember, we went around the table and asked members to identify the issues that they're most interested in terms of education policy, particularly this session. And it was quite an impressive list of ideas desires that were expressed with members. A lot of overlap, a lot of agreement, if you will, in terms of what we thought collectively would be important issues to raise. And I'm not going to go through them, but would encourage you to do that. And just as I went through them very quickly, I haven't actually looked at these again for quite a while until this morning. I felt actually pretty good that I think we covered, in one way or another, a good chunk of these issues. In some cases, moving legislation forward. Other cases, simply incorporating or thinking about these issues as we move legislation forward and having these issues guide our decision making. So what I would encourage you to do is to look through the list and then turn to your yellow sheet. And if you can answer these questions, then, this is not obligatory. If you don't feel like turning it in, that's fine. It's really more meant for your own personal reflection, but also to help the chair be able to do an assessment of how we did in terms of meeting your expectations. It is my desire and intent that during the interim we'll be putting together a couple of working groups to focus on the issues that you feel we should spend more time and be thinking about for future policy making in the next legislative session. We did this 2 years ago. We had, probably over the course of the last couple of years, a half a dozen or so working group. I know Representative Greiling has done the same thing with her finance committee. And for the newer members, it's really a great opportunity for you to continue to be engaged in education policy shaping as a legislator during the interim period of time. Some of these activities take on a very formal public characteristic. We do, the working groups do hold hearings. The public's invited. It's an opportunity for our sort of newer members to actually head up some of these groups and chair these committees, to work with a broad range of stakeholders and continue to push our deeper understanding of public policy and education and to vet new ideas that can turn into, hopefully, very helpful legislation. So that's really kind of the overall goal with this reflection. It's both for the purpose of any reflection, but it's also for the purpose of setting ourselves up to continue the work that we started this legislative session. So with that, I'm going to stop and certainly invite any members who have had a chance to look at any questions, if they have any comments or if they've looked at any of the already applied through the list of priorities, if they have any thoughts about that. And then, like I said, I would encourage you to turn in your sheets because that'll help the chair be able to make decisions around the working group structure. So with that, I'm going to stop and see if there's any reactions or thoughts or... Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, first of all, I want to say, Chair Mariani, that you do a great job of having us say our priorities and having some follow-ups. You know, in most of our committees, we do neither. So it's great to see that. And it's interesting for me to look back and see what I said and, you know, kind of what comes to fruition. I think the biggest thing we didn't maybe expect this session or know how bad the budget deficit was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the types of things we have are working on around mandates, any kind of mandates just seem to be kind of off the table. And I don't know if in the future they'll come back on the table, but that seemed, for me, it was a struggle hearing the bills and then not being able to do them because of money issues or mandate issues. So I think, from the early childhood perspective, you know, it's been interesting being on the committee and seeing the continuum, and I think you did a great job of trying to include all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And of the bills, and I just hope we, as we continue, to some of you that have been on this committee before, we continue to take some of the same issues up, but that's the nature of the legislature and what happens, is that issues have to be vented thoroughly, and sometimes they make it, and sometimes they don't. But I thought overall the process was good, and I appreciate the opportunity to get input. I don't think we get to do that, but I'm trying to think of any other committee. I'm thinking maybe I should do this in my committee. So you're setting a very good example here.
Thank you, Representative
Mr. Chair, I'll just say ditto. I'm going to copy it, too, for K-12. I've never seen it done before. I think it's excellent. And I'm just astounded also in going through the list at how many things we did do. And even the finance things, when we get the finance bill done and the new Minnesota Miracle is enacted for 2014-15, those things will be done, too, just not this biennium.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani. I too felt, as a particularly as a freshman, that I appreciated your approach to the process. I think that the learning curve for freshmen is very high, and you were very patient. You listened. You allowed us, many of us, to be freshmen and to express our comments. And you were open to new ideas and open to new. Cooperative efforts, and I really appreciated being on your committee for the last several months, and that's why I asked in the last session we had if this was the last one, because I wanted to make sure that I told you that in a more public venue and to have everyone else listen. I'm hoping that I'm intending to fill this out, and I'm hoping that you'll give us more than today to do it. If we can get it to you in the next day or so, that would be very greatly appreciated. And thank you again for leading the way and showing us an excellent example of being a chairman.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have enjoyed working with you as the lead, and I think that we've had a very good relationship throughout this process. I would like to suggest that the GOP members are going to be continuing to meet as we go on, so maybe we can compile something from all of us together to return, if that would be good.
Very good. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate not so much seeing what I had to say, because hopefully I remembered what I had to say, reviewing the rest of my committee members, my colleagues' thoughts about where we were going. And then what I think this does for us is set a standard for policy continuity for in our review and our awareness of policy when we look back and have a more of a common understanding of what some of our shared issues are. I think it's a challenge to the future, and I think that's the way policy should be done, with some long-range visioning. So I really appreciate that. I think we've set a high standard in this committee for research-based decision-making, and that's something that I hope will continue to uphold. I think that's where you can get across disagreements that are more that are based on opinion as opposed to data driven. So I hope we can continue to do this kind of thing, and this is a great tool for supporting this.
Thank you, Representative Brainerd. Members, it's been truly a privilege to chair this committee and work with you. I've enjoyed both good collective but also personal relationships with all members on both sides of the aisle. I have a good friend and colleague who a few years ago told me, Representative Mariani, we're only passing through here. And they were deep words of wisdom in terms of not invalidating our own individuality, our own individual beliefs and philosophies, but lifting up the importance of this institution and hopefully our practices can contribute to sustain continual institutional memory and practices here that build on successive years of trial and error and knowledge. And in that spirit, it's truly a privilege to work with all of you to make this institution the best that it can be in terms of helping to lead the state in good policy. Very well. So, members, please do fill out the forms either now or later, would be fine. And as I said, we will have a hearing on April 21st, and then we'll be sometime, hopefully, before session, making at least some initial decisions about working group, and I'll be soliciting your interest for participation in the months to come. With that, members, we have House File 1080, Representative Norton. And as Representative Norton prepares to present the House File, let me just give you a little sort of background about the technical position of House File 1080. We are today in the last day in which we can move bills through a policy deadline or second policy deadline based on the Senate having moved their bills through the first policy deadline. Apparently, the Senate Companion House File 1080 was intended by the Senate to be moved. However, the Senate goofed up. As you know, they created one big committee out of their two committees. And, you know, as you can tell, I get a little bit of glee in just sort of, picking on the Senate. But apparently, Representative Norton, apparently they intended to move your Senate Companion out of policy into finance, so to make the deadline. But they simply laid the bill over because it's the same committee, right? So they convened as policy, laid the bill over with the intention to roll it into their omnibus bill, which they have. But, quite frankly, technically did not move the bill. The bill just stopped. It got, stayed in policy. And since I don't have the power to rewrite the rules that both the House and the Senate have agreed to, They have technically not met their deadline with the bill. In the Senate, they certainly can continue to move the bill in the Senate, but it puts the House in a position where we simply cannot move the bill because it didn't meet first deadline in the Senate. Nonetheless, we can hear the bill, and we've been told that we can even amend the bill, and then the farthest that we can do is to simply lay the bill over once we've heard it. Since the Senate does have this language in the Senate bill, we thought it would be helpful and useful for House members at least to be exposed to the concepts of the bill and to be informed of it as we negotiate with the Senate regarding this bill. So the motion today would be, the motion would be to recommend to pass, and then we will lay over the bill. So Representative Norton, with that, if you want to be the official maker of that motion, we will then have the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move House File 1080 to pass and be laid over.
Very well. Representative Norton moves that House File 1080 be recommended to pass. Representative Norton.
And I would also, Mr. Chair, like to move the H1080DE3 amendment.
Representative Norton moves the DE3 amendment. This is a delete everything amendment, and so members, I would encourage us to adopt the delete everything amendment, and we'll have the bill before us, and if the author wishes it to be, she'll walk us through it. All in favor of the DE3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Norton, your bill is before us in the form that you wish it to be.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think it is important just to give a brief history. This bill has a history with this committee before my time on the committee and even before that in rules. And I think I would just like to say that the delete all amendment before you is significantly different than the original bill that you looked at a couple years ago, but the intent is still the same. And the intent was to improve reading for students through enhanced teacher preparation programs offered by our colleges and universities so that our pre-service teacher candidates receive improved preparation on the skills needed to teach reading. The bill provides a broad approach to reading that recognizes the different learning styles and reading abilities of children and the need for teachers to have a variety of tools in their belt when they work with them. What the bill does is ensure a broader approach to reading that recognizes different learning styles. It addresses the critical need for teachers to have a variety of those tools, as I mentioned before, and to focus, and I mentioned this, the tools, the five areas, and I want to specifically call out what those are: phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension, and those are listed in the bill as well. I certainly know in my school district, we have had over the years, depending on our school budget and the money available, we have reading teachers in our school district that are hired to help, because we found that too many of our new teachers coming into our school district did not know how to teach all readers. Certainly, if they could instill the love of reading, and that is one thing that I think every teacher needs, is to be able to instill the love of learning, and teachers were doing a great job with that. But for students who struggled with reading, they often didn't have the techniques available in order to address that. And so I'll just tell you, in my community, we have the Reading Center, and we have someone here in a little bit that from the Rochester Reading Center that will testify. But the Reading Center has been working with teachers, certainly students in our district for a very long time, but with teachers in our district very successfully to help re-educate teachers on some of those skills that they needed to be able to teach these hard-to-read students. And so this bill is going to hopefully make that less necessary, and I don't mean to have the Reading Center out of a job, but if we prepare our teachers better in their pre-service learning, perhaps there won't be quite the need in the future. So those are the provisions in the bill. I think I will just walk you through quickly the bill, which is, as I mentioned, is different than it has been in the past. I think it's also worth noting that in the past there was some resistance from parties, which I'm sure you heard at this table and in the past. We believe we have worked through those differences in this bill, and one of the reasons I think it was so important that we have this bill heard and that you understand it is, should, and I believe it will, the Senate version come before you, there may be some things in this version of the bill that have addressed the concerns by some of the parties that are not addressed yet in the Senate bill. And so you will at least have in this engrossed version perhaps some compromise language that would be more to the House's liking. And so by moving this, we will have it on the table and you'll have it to look at. So there are some minor language changes. There are some definitions in the bill at the very beginning. I think it's worth noting on line 2.8 for some of you that have heard this bill in the past. Nothing in this subdivision limits the authority of a school district to select a school's reading program and curriculum. There have been concerns in the past that this bill was attempting to do that. It does not. It speaks to candidates for initial licensure, so this is not requiring any new testing for current teachers. But what it does, and it's at the top of page 3, starts at the end of 2, but on 3.1 through 3.7, what this does is allow the Board of Teaching to embed in its newest teacher pedagogy test for reading and content the components for comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction. And the Board of Teaching is here to talk about that, and you can ask them any questions you want about that. But it will not be a separate test. It will be questions specific to scientific reading instruction that will be embedded in the next test, which is, I believe, out for bids. I think a testing company has been selected at this point, and they'll be working with them. And you can talk to her about that later. And then it just clarifies, and one thing I will compliment Lisa Larson, as always, the expert at our table, who has helped us place the language in the right sections of law. We think we're there now. And so with that, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is let the testifiers come before you and share. And then I will say that a Representative Depke has approached me that she has a constituent that is not on the list that is here today that would like to share her thoughts as well. So perhaps at the end of the testifiers that are on your seat, we could see if there's anyone else in the audience, if that's for the Chair's liking, that would like to comment.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Norton. And so, should we just work off this list?
Mm-hmm.
So we have Nancy Sears from the Rochester Reading Center. You know, we can perhaps bring people up in twos. So maybe if the page can help get another chair up there, that would be helpful. After Nancy, we have Mike Savage from Forest Hills Elementary School in Eden Prairie. So, Ms. Sears, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
And this is for all the testifiers, but since we record the hearings, we ask everyone to state their name for the record and then give us your testimony.
Okay. I'm Nancy Sears from the Rochester Reading Center. And what I'd like to do first is acquaint you a little bit with the Reading Center so that you know where we're coming from. We're a nonprofit United Way agency, and we've been teaching children and adults who have difficulty learning to read for the past 60 years. So we've had quite a long history of working with children and students who have difficulty learning to read. Also, starting in 2001, Winona State University contracted with us to teach their special ed department a 10-credit undergrad and grad level course in scientifically based reading instruction. So we've been doing that for 8 years, and I just spoke with one of the professors at Winona State just last week. She is interested in taking our course because as a professor at the school, she would eventually like to take over teaching reading to the students. Because sometimes it's hard to get our people over there. One of our teachers who was taking the training died suddenly and, you know, left a big hole there. So the professors are interested in knowing about scientifically based reading research and the five strands and how to teach it to pre-service teachers. Another thing, what we've been doing in Rochester that's so exciting is we have... And this has been teacher-driven. We have infused scientifically-based reading instruction into the Rochester core curriculum, which happens to be Seth Forsman. But we've added the pieces that students coming into our schools haven't learned yet in their college experience, and that's from their what they're telling us. And so they get this instruction, and they're able to teach it to a full classroom, kindergarten through fifth grade, we taught, as well as ESOL teachers, as well as LD, as well as Title I, or so all the tiers for response to intervention would be covered. And hopefully, the teachers teaching at the kindergarten level will give these students the building blocks of what they'll need. So maybe they won't even have to suffer being labeled LD or a child with a reading disability. And it works with all of these different children. So that's exciting to us. This year, we've done this since 2007 in one school, and we usually teach 30 teachers at a time, or 20, I'm sorry, 20 teachers at a time, and then we also do coaching, so they get part of the lecture period throughout the year, and get 30 hours of lecture, and then the same time during the year, one of our master teachers goes in and coaches the teachers as they're teaching in their classroom. And I've seen some of their videos, and it's amazing how a classroom teacher can take the 20 or 30 kids in her classroom and from all demographics in that classroom and teach them the building blocks of reading that will help them to not fail. So that is amazing. And later on I have a couple of comments from some of the teachers who teach in ESOL and who teach in the after-school academies where there are the low-achieving students or the students from poverty backgrounds. And a lot of improvement in that area. The school that we're working at the present time, their demographics, they have a population of 263 children, Asian 5%, Black 26%, Hispanic 28%, White 41%, limited English proficiency 43%, special ed 10%, free and reduced lunch 67%. And these students are learning. And some of the comments that I've had, or that the teachers have given in their journals, that address what the students are feeling, one of them, he says, the students are appreciating learning the why of the rules. One of my least able fourth graders said about the double drop change lesson, I get this. Why didn't anyone ever teach me this before? So this is coming from a low achieving fourth grader. Another one said, implementing scientifically based reading research into the classroom is fun and exciting. My favorite most recent connection was from a Somali girl. She said, Mrs. X, look. Love, the word love. Never end the word in D. Always add an E. So she's learning the rules for spelling as well, which is exciting. And as I said before, if we can hit these kids in kindergarten, first grade, we're saving a lot of lives. We're saving a lot of kids from falling out, as my son did, and having his mother have to know all of the police officers in Russia. I mean, we don't want that to happen to little kids. We want them to be successful. We don't want the low self-esteem to come in and have them end up in the judicial system. When we work with our teachers in the what we call our infusion training, we give them a pretest, just to see, you know, where their weaknesses, where their strengths are. And the average score in these pretests are about 10 out of 100 questions. I think it's 10 points out of 100 questions. And then we also give them a final test, which is pretty much the same as the pretest, but most of them at that time score 100%. So they're learning what it is about the structure of the English language that is so important to teach kids. One of the teachers said, it has probably been the most valuable class I have taken. It really is going to make me a much more effective teacher. I feel good about how much I have learned. And I'll give you one last one, and we're running short of time. She says, our sidewalks unit 2 test, and that's from the core curriculum, Scott Forsman, was very satisfying. The scores on the phonics section were nearly perfect, with only a few students getting one wrong. They also did extremely well on vocabulary, I believe because of our study of prefix groups and suffix groups. This is in comparison with last year's Unit 2 test, when nearly all of my students failed the phonics section and did poorly on vocabulary. I am so grateful to have this new training, which is obviously making a better teacher, making me a better teacher. So,
thank you, Ms. Sears, and thank you for sharing the important work that you're doing with the Rochester Reading Center. We'll have to perhaps further advise our young people to stay away from TV commercials where the advertisers are more than comfortable with ending words with Z in their visuals. We do have a question for Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm tempted to say I just bought a new Sears washer and dryer, but this is not the time to, and we like them. The question I've got, does your program deal with dyslexic, that right word?
Yes.
Children?
Yes.
And their special needing, learning the requirements so that they can stay up to speed with their classes and so forth?
Yes. Okay. Dyslexia is sometimes a misunderstood word. It means disability with, or unexpected difficulty learning to read and spell.
Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you. When I was on the school board, that's one of the things that I really wasn't aware of until we had a family that really had all of their children dealing with that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, you kind of hone in on it a little bit and figure out how to do it. And so I'm just glad to know that you're working with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Sears.
Thank you.
Next we have Mike Savage. And then Karen Ballmer from the Board of Teaching. I guess she'll be up next. Good morning, Mr. Savage.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Savage, and thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here. My name is Mike Savage, and I am I'm an educational coordinator in the Eden Prairie School District, and what led me to that position has been about 11 years of teaching. 9 of those years were spent in North Minneapolis in the Minneapolis School District, where I worked in a school with about 60% of the students African American, 39% of the students being Latino, and about 1% of the students being white. I, as Mike Savage, a fish out of water, graduated from Apple Valley High School, and working in North Minneapolis was quite an experience. I taught first grade there, and about midway through my time in Minneapolis, I was exposed to Reading First training, which is training that has to do with the 5 components of literacy that we talked about earlier. And as I was going through the training for the 5 components of literacy, I met it with resistance because I thought what I was doing was just fine. As a matter of fact, I was holding my own in a very challenging setting, and I felt like I was making some differences with some kids. But the bottom line was, when it came down to the data, I was having about 60% of my kids being proficient by the end of the year in reading. And it's not good enough. And so I internalized the need for me to change. And I heard the committee this morning talking about data-driven decisions, and that's just what I decided to do in my personal classroom, was take a look at what the research said worked, check my ego at the side, and say, you know what, I need to do what works for kids. And I took on the 5 components and was quite resistant to it, but in the end started seeing some pretty exciting things. Unfortunately, once I was getting pretty close to nearly 100% of my kids being proficient in North Minneapolis, I was laid off of that school district because of declining enrollment on the North Side, known as the North Side Initiative. A closing of the Northside schools, which led to my very exciting arrival in Indian Prairie School District, where it has been an honor to work in Indian Prairie Schools. Only to find out, when I came to Indian Prairie Schools and I talked about my Reading First training and the 5 components, many teachers had not heard of that. And as I started sharing with them my experiences from Minneapolis and my experiences from taking those on and practicing my classroom and people seeing how they're impacting kids right there at Forest Hills Elementary in Prairie, people started to ask more questions about it. And I got to explain more and more about it. But one of the things they would often say to me is, I haven't heard this before. This is a very innovative approach. I've heard of those five terms, but you teach them very differently. You teach them very differently. When I walk into your classroom, Mike, it doesn't feel like a typical lesson. There's something different about this. I want to learn more. So two years in a first grade position. By the way, I taught all first grade in Minneapolis and then in Eden Prairie. In the final 2 years of my teaching career, my classroom teaching career, I actually obtained that 100% proficiency mark in my classroom, and it was quite exciting. And I attribute it to the research data-driven approaches. And in fact, last year it led me to two pretty fun awards. One was the Eden Prairie Teacher of the Year Award for last year, and then also the Chamber of Commerce honored me with their Golden Apple Award, the Eden Prairie Chamber of Commerce.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's pretty exciting. both having to do with work with closing the achievement gap in literacy, so racial disparities. So what seems to happen in education is when we find people that do quite well in the classroom, they leave the classroom. And that's what happened to me. I am now serving at Forest Hills Elementary School as the educational coordinator, as I started testimony with, and have had the honor to work with a tremendous staff, a very listening staff that also shares that data-driven approach, that checking of their egos at the door and saying, tell me what works for kids and let me give it a shot. And so over the summer, myself and four others at our building led our staff through 18 hours of literacy training to bring in a new model, a new literacy model that addresses the five components of literacy, but more importantly, addresses every single child in the classroom. We ask our teachers to progress monitor all of our students on a weekly basis. And what I mean by progress monitoring is having kids check in with their classroom teacher on a weekly basis to get a running record reading score, so that we can answer the simple question of, is what we are doing in our classrooms working for a particular child? And we have protocols set up to make that data-driven decision. If the answer to that question is no, we need to make some changes. If the answer to that question is yes, we need to keep doing what we're doing. Forest Hills Elementary School is a unique school in that it's in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and oftentimes we really do live in a community and society of stereotypes, and we certainly might have some stereotypes about Eden Prairie. And I would, much like the ego, check it out the door, the stereotype check them out the door as well, because Forest Hills Elementary School is 50% white, 50% students of color. 30% of the students are Somali students, and 45% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch or live in poverty-like conditions. And yet, what we are seeing, we saw in my classroom with teaching of the five components of literacy, is high rates of proficiency. And so far this year, it's been a half of year of implementing new practice that teachers are also sharing. They're seeing higher performance in their students, and we're really excited to see what will happen by the end of the year. All of this said, there's another element of this that has to be acknowledged, that the scientific, systematic approach to reading that we're talking about here is indeed something that works for kids. But there's something in addition to that every great teacher has, and it's what I call, and we all heard of it, it's called high expectations. But it's more than just saying I have high expectations. I shared this with the Senate a few weeks ago. It's the idea of when we have high expectations, do we really believe we have high expectations? In other words, are we lowering our expectations in the classroom for our kids without even realizing it? Are we teaching the five components with a heart inside of us saying, no, they're not going to work, therefore the expectation has been lowered? Or are we teaching our students with the faith and the high expectation the five components work, and they can indeed help every single child in the classroom? I contend that there is a possible correlation. I also shared with the Senate this week ago that it's a trait that all great teachers have, and it's the trait of having high degrees of sympathy and having high degrees of empathy and having high degrees of compassion for our students. But sometimes with that high level of sympathy comes a justification for lower achievement in the classroom, therefore a lowering of an expectation. In other words, a child comes to my classroom, they haven't learned the English language yet, Therefore, I will expect them to perform at a rate far less than my students that that know English. If I hold that belief, I've lowered my expectation without even realizing it, and I've done that child in my school a tremendous disservice, and that child's family as well. So when we talk about the five components, I strongly recommend that everyone in this room also takes the idea of high expectations to heart and know that this is a data-driven approach to teaching reading. But you can have all the silver bullets you want, but if you don't have the high expectations to back that up, it's just another program. So I would say just to have that high expectation in place and constantly reflecting on what we are doing in our classrooms daily and how we're talking with kids daily. And being aware of those things we're saying, because we could potentially be lowering our expectations for kids without even realizing. So thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. I have to say, probably the clearest, concisest, and straight-to-the-heart description of high expectations in K-12 settings that I've heard. And thank you for sharing that with us. And then also, obviously, connecting that to the use of this particular approach to literacy training. And congratulations again for your apparently well-deserved recognition. We do have a couple of members that have questions or comments. Representative McFarland, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Savage, I really appreciated your testimony today. You commented about some of the teachers not being aware of this program or these ideas. Do you feel that the five strands are taught in the teaching institutions for the K-5? I'm just curious.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel they're taught by name at times. However, I'm not in the higher ed institutions watching what's being taught. I can only speak from my experience of when I was going through my undergrad studies. And I do remember some of the terminology that was used, and I remember using terms like phonemic awareness and phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. I'm glad you asked that question, because I knew those terms, but yet even until I took my reading first training in the five components, I never knew the difference between phonics and phonemic awareness. I never knew that difference. They both start with P, they both sound like the same thing. It must have to do with letter sounds of some sort. Until recently, you know, through the training, I realized that there is a difference there. And I shared that at Forest Hills with teachers, and basically phonemic awareness is what students hear, phonics is what students see in text, and I've had seasoned teachers come up to me and say, holy cow, I can't believe I'm tell you this, I'm kind of embarrassed to tell you this, Mike, but that's now I know the difference now also between phonemic awareness and phonics. So I think we've heard these terms, everyone's heard them, kids have heard them. God, but like high expectations, I really wonder if we have a deep understanding of what they are.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also congratulate you, learning disabilities teacher, and I do feel that early intervention is really, really important. I was at the high school level, however, doing it. And my question deals with, you certainly have talked about this whole process of, you know, the reading process that you're very inspired by, and I noticed in the language of the bill that it says it's not going to be tied to curriculum. And can you talk a little bit more about, you know, every district has their own series of books and curriculum, and so how does this coordinate with those different districts' curriculum processes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fantastic question. It's one of the questions that came up again this summer with our teachers. And basically, I'll try to be concise with the answer. It's a deep answer. But taking a series, a curriculum series, like Ms. Sears shared earlier, we also have the Scott Forsman curriculum in Indian Prairie School. We've asked the teachers to follow the scope and sequence of that curriculum. In other words, we've asked them to follow the core subjects that are being laid out in an order, and asking teachers to identify what lessons are in the Scott Forsman scope and sequence, what component is addressed by teaching that. And I've even had teachers highlight in their lesson plan book or color code the lesson. So phonemic awareness might be green, comprehension might be red, vocabulary might be blue. And then I've asked teachers to look at that see if there's a rainbow of colors in their weekly lesson plan. If you see a rainbow of colors, you have a balance of the five components. Yet you're still using the Scott Borsman curriculum. In Minneapolis, we had the Hood Mifflin curriculum, very similar to Scott Borsman, but the same approach was also taken there. And that we just look at what was in the curriculum, named a component that addressed each lesson in the curriculum, and then had teachers look, or at that point just had myself look and see, am I seeing a balance of five components in my personal lesson planning? So there's a separation. There's the curriculum, there's the teacher mind to adapt the curriculum, and ultimately extracting the five components of literacy out of the curriculum.
Just quickly, I'm really glad to hear that, because I think some people think that this kind of process is only for like reading recovery or specific curriculum series, that they're going to have to change all their books and all of what they're doing, and it really can be embedded into the curriculum that you have in your district.
Absolutely.
Very well, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Savage, it's a pleasure listening to you. I don't know if you spend much time listening to what we do here, but we get to pontificate about lots of different things and think lofty and sometimes much more detailed. But my question for you, you talk about high expectations, and I think you even mentioned 100% proficiency in your classroom. And here, as a legislature in general and as a committee in specific, we struggle with high expectations. How high? Particularly in the area of our standards, and we're reevaluating standards and going through those. And of course, as you know, reading is one of the four primary standards that we have. In your mind, how do you balance what we're doing as a state with our standards and the expectations we have with what you're doing in reading, and how do you reconcile that? And if this is an opportunity for you to pontificate and give us your thoughts about that. Because I think we need to be listening to people like you as we look at what we want to happen in our state in terms of expectations, and many of us being lay people, working with the professionals in the industry to make sure that we have the high expectations that are reasonable, but yet have the high expectations.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm honored to ask that question. Thank you. It's a big question, and I have shared this with our literacy specialist at our site. He's Jeff Thielen. We have a weekly meeting. He's a literacy specialist. I'm the educational coordinator. Together, we're leading this change of course of elementary school in reading. And as we reflect, we always fall back on high expectations. We always land on high expectations. And what is so important, and I think we're starting to realize this, is there are so many programs out there. You mentioned Reading Recovery earlier. There's lots of different programs out there. They're all very good. They all potentially could produce 100% proficiency, but what perhaps is missing is the high expectation. So when we're seeking the standards, one of the questions I would ask if I sat as part of the planning of standards, sat in a group, would be, what are we saying in this setting? What are we saying? What are we saying with our mouths that lower our expectations for students? If we're saying we're going to put a standard out there, and then we're going to be surprised if a student can obtain that standard. That element of surprise that we have inside of us should be an indicator that we've lowered our expectation without even realizing it. So when you say reasonable, I think it's a very important word, yet very slippery, because you don't want to be reasonable and yet lower the expectation, but you want to be reasonable enough so you're not going to be surprised at an outcome. So as you're developing standards, I think it's being cognizant of what is grade level appropriate, and also holding each and every student to a high expectation in a way that you're not going to be surprised at the result, no matter who it is. And I'll speak very candidly. Not if it's a black student, not if it's a brown student, not if it's a white student. You're not going to be surprised at the result. If you can get yourself in a place where you're not going to be surprised at a result, you're holding every student in your classroom to high expectations. If you're at a place in your personal life where you're going to be surprised by a certain student's attempt at a standard, then your expectation has probably been lowered and you haven't even realized it.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. We are going to move on. I, too, Representative Demmer, am always privileged when we hear directly from educators on the front lines. And, Mr. Savage, we wish you continued good luck with your work, and we thank you for your work on behalf of our children in Minnesota. Next, we have Karen Ballmer, and I'm also going to ask Susan Thompson, who is to come forward as well. But Karen, Karen Ballmer with the Board of Teaching. The Board of Teaching has had a little bit to do with this particular approach to literacy and reading, and so we look forward to hearing your thoughts about the legislation before us.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I need to confess that I hear the current testimony just preceding mine, and I think I miss being in the classroom in this. It is exciting, and it's really wonderful to hear that kind of work, and makes me think, well, maybe someday I'll get back there and my little second graders. But anyway, I'm here this morning to provide some background and updates for you with respect to the work that the Board of Teaching has been doing around the area of preparation of teachers in reading. And it is exciting, and we're thrilled to be able to bring you this update this morning. Our work goes back to 2007 when the Board of Teaching made a very conscious and deliberate decision to do some hard work in terms of reviewing and revising our standards as it relates to preparing teachers to serve students so that they might read. And so we launched a task force at that time to do this work. This task force, it was a tremendous charge. It was an enormous charge that they were given to do this review and revision work. But through a long period of time, through very concentrated work, through the input of many dozens of stakeholders outside of the task force, through passionate dialogues, not always easy dialogues, we actually were able to come to consensus around a set of proposed standards that would be used to prepare early childhood and elementary teachers in the area of reading. This task force, you should know, was comprised of members of higher education faculty around the state, members of reading organizations, folks who have been active here at the legislature. It was a very diverse group of individuals, but it needs to be very clear that without exception, this group of task force members are deeply passionate and deeply committed to our students and their success in reading. And so while not always an easy task, it was a group of people very committed to the task, and so they said we were successful in coming to consensus about a set of proposed reading standards to be used with our teacher candidates. So we took those proposed standards and we launched a rulemaking process last summer in July, and we've been marching through that rulemaking process ever since. We are now nearing the finish line of that rulemaking process. I'm thrilled to tell you that we have a hearing scheduled in just a couple weeks, on April 24th, where we will present these proposed standards to administrative law judge. It should be noted, though, for the committee that the rulemaking effort was much bigger than just the reading standards. There are a number of changes and moving parts to the rulemaking process, and a couple of pretty significant structural changes to the elementary preparation program, one of which is the proposed reading standards. So the rulemaking process itself is large. A significant portion of the proposed standards does relate to reading, but that is important to know because as we have moved forward in the rulemaking process, the reading proposals have been largely uncontested. And the consensus that we enjoyed in the task force process has we've seen play out now in the rulemaking process. We believe that we will in fact be successful now in this hearing, and then as the board receives the word back from the administrative law judge as a result that we will in fact be successful in bringing these new proposed reading standards to life, adopting them into rule. We hope this June or July. So that's the update. It's good news from, as I see it, from the Board of Teaching's perspective. We did work with the legislature last year. year, both in this body and also in the Senate, with the legislative language that that came forward. And as Representative Norton indicated in her opening comments, there have been a number of iterations of the bill language. We have I've been very appreciative of the fact that the Board of Teaching's input has been solicited and received, and it has been reflected in the bill draft as it's moved along. And the amendment that you have before you, I think, is the strongest language in terms of bringing together a number of perspectives, and so I think it is a strong document that you have before you. I'm certainly happy to comment on any specific questions that you might have about the language, but I think I'll pause there with just my update in terms of the board's process, which aligns very well with the language that you have before you in this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Farmer. We have a question from Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see again, Ms. Varmer. We had been working on these issues before, and then I had a little personal detour, and so I kind of fell by the wayside. But I just have a couple of items. First of all, just to, straightforwardly, does the Board of Teaching support this legislation as it's presently written, first of all?
Ms.
Palmer. Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, in the delete all amendment.
Yes,
we will support this language. We believe that it aligns well with what we are doing. So, in other words, having parallel tracks of legislation and the Board of Teaching rulemaking efforts, there is alignment. I believe you will hear later this morning about a concern that is a bit is still on the horizon that relates to the effective date, and so that is certainly something that we are happy to weigh in on. But in general, we're very pleased with the direction of this bill.
So, Ms. Palmer, the delete all language amendment before us would fit within that acceptance of the Board of Teaching.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think I have tried to stay away from the discussions very specific to reading technical reading language. We at the Board of Teaching have sought to defer those conversations to the reading experts, and you've got a number here today and that you'll hear from. So I believe that those areas that have been controversial in the past have been worked out fairly significantly, and so we would stand as in support of those discussions as they move forward.
Thank you.
Just a follow-up question or two regarding the Senate bill, wherever that is. Could you be specific in describing an item or two in that version which is still problematic compared to this delete all amendment here in the House?
Ms. Palmer.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Benson. There remains a section in the Senate file that has to do with it's the final section in the bill that it's called legislative review. We have spoken to that piece. Not because we have any opposition to the idea that the legislature would be watching what the Board of Teaching is doing. In fact, we believe that that's a good and healthy role for you. But as a matter of precedent, we've been concerned that there would be language about having timelines put around when we can and cannot adopt rules and so on. So that's more of a policy matter, and you'll see that language in the House Bill 1080 as the last section, I believe it's section 6. So that has been changed. They have continued to work with us on that language, which we have greatly appreciated. But there still is some language about that in there. The other piece I think that you'll see addressed in the delete all amendment before you today relates to the specific assessment. And in the Senate language, there is very clear language that says that the Board of Teaching may embed this assessment component into existing reading or existing teacher tests. And that has been our intent all along. The delete all amendment that you have before you today makes very explicit that is the only avenue that could be taken. Whereas in the Senate, it could be a standalone reading test, or it could be what we intend to do, which is the embedding into existing tests.
Okay. I just have one follow-up.
Representative Norton.
Yes, thank you. I would say not a question from the Board of Teaching, but Mackey had some concerns, and they brought those forward, and they had to do with some language, and those changes have been made in the House bill, and I do not know that those have all been made in the Senate version. So Mackey still has some concerns with a couple of the uses of language, effective balance, I don't remember, replicated. We've made those changes based on the input from Mackey in our bill as well.
And just the last kind of follow-up question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Salmer is concerning the state universities and colleges. Is the concern about the implementation date related to them being able to get up to speed? And what has been the general reaction from the university colleges of education concerning these changes that are being proposed? Are they... I'll just say, are they cooperative? Are they working with you?
And we do have two testifiers from one from Mackey and from the University of Minnesota. It's
all right.
It might be good, and I know Ms. Thompson asked you to come up here, but it might be good to have them move forward because I think we're getting into areas that are raising questions directly of them. So they can come forward on Ms. Palmer. Perhaps respond to Representative Benson's question, then we can move forward. Representative Binder, do you have a question as well? Do you want to wait for the higher ed? Okay, very well. Ms. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson and members, yes, the short answer is to your question, has higher ed been cooperative? Absolutely. We have full agreement in the effective date that the Board of Teaching has proposed. Of September 1st, 2010 as the date when two things would happen. All new candidates entering a preparation program would be held to these new standards. And again, remember, it's more than just reading. There's some other big structural changes for particularly elementary teachers. So September 1, 2010 is the date that we've agreed that all of those programs will be changed, up and running, operational. And all new candidates who enter a prep program on that date will be held to those new standards. Similarly, the assessments that align with those new programs will be operational, and so we have had full agreement on that. The date that has been more difficult is the date that relates to teacher candidates that are in the pipeline prior to September 1, 2010. And so that's the conversation that I believe you'll hear this morning. How do we make sure that those candidates who are in the pipeline, this coming year, for example, have the appropriate preparation, are prepared with the necessary tools, and what should be the effective date for them in terms of meeting these new standards? So that's the question before you. But in terms of September 1, 2010, all programs will be changed. The new tests will be up and running in alignment with those programs. And that's been we've had universal agreement on that. Although I wouldn't say that I have not raised anyone's blood pressure. That's not an easy task to be ambitious, but we've agreed to that.
Very well. Why don't we turn to Dr. Prenn and Dr. Dillon, and you've heard the questions. I suspect that they perhaps, at the very least, touch on the issues that you wish to share with us today. But why don't you proceed with your testimony? And members, we have a little over 15 minutes left in the hearing. We still have one other individual who's asked to testify, and I believe Representative Depke, you have a constituent as well that wanted to comment. But we'll need to be very precise and judicious with our time. So, good morning. Welcome to the committee. Who's going to begin?
Good morning. My name is Maureen Prenn, and I am currently president of MACD. I'm also a literacy professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato. And, of course, I bring, like everyone here, a passion for seeing that each and every child and citizen is successful. And in order to be successful, you must have those literacy skills. I'm not going to address specific language in the bill. Instead, I'll concern myself with more looking at the higher ed perspective in terms of the curriculum change and the dates. So, if you will, I've prepared a few comments, and I'll try and be as efficient as possible.
Thank you.
I certainly have watched the work of the Reading Task Force with much interest. There's also been some other task forces and changes, as Karen Ballmer mentioned to you. Institutions stand at the ready to make changes in the curriculum for both these large rulemaking processes. We've already begun our conversations in order to get things underway. There will definitely be additional credits going into our programs as we relook at what we're doing for literacy. There's no question about that. In order to meet the new requirements for more in-depth standards as well as a literacy-focused practicum, I will tell you that these conversations are going on and we're looking at how to embed those into our curriculum. One thing that has happened, and Karen Ballmer mentioned to you that there were other parts of the rulemaking, and a large part of that was, in the current rule, all elementary candidates, in addition to getting a K-6 license, also were required to do a specialty in either pre-primary or middle school. And you might think, well, why are you talking about that now? Well, that took up a large chunk of credits in our programs. And as you know, especially Minsky institutions, we're very careful on our credit numbers. We don't have any space in order to go above a certain credit cap. At our institution, it was 128. It will now be 120. So we're actually, because of this new process, we're having some additional credits freed up for us to utilize to devote to literacy and other kinds of concerns. Having said that, one of the things that goes with that is that institutions are having to do wholesale restructuring in order to figure out how to make both of these changes, both taking away the one as well as incorporating some additional content with the literacy. So the changes taken collectively are going to mean a major restructuring of the curriculum. So from our perspective, the effective date designated in the bill currently, if it becomes law, should be that candidates admitted to professional programs after September 1, 2010 are effective, and that is admitted. The way it will work is that our new curriculums will be voted on next year and approved through the approval process. They will go into effect for fall 2010. So curriculum change 2009, effective date 2010. So the new curriculum will not be available for any candidates until that fall of 2010. And to us, that's the challenge with the current language in the bill. We are really concerned about having candidates take a test that they have not been prepared for. And I want to just take a minute to back up a little bit and say that if the effective date is January 1, 2011, the candidates who will be taking that test will actually be student teaching in fall of 2010. So they won't have had any of the coursework that will help them be prepared for this new exam that will be coming up and they'll be facing. And obviously we don't want to put them in that position. So Mackey is asking that rather than have an end date in the bill, we look at effective date of new candidates being admitted, and that would be that September 1, 2010 date. If we have to have an end date, then we believe that we should look at summer or September 1 of 2012. That gets us to the point where we have three full semesters of coursework as well as a semester of student teaching, so that people are ready with the new curriculum to be able to take that examination. I've shortened it way up, but I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Dr. Tran. Dr. Gill.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Good morning. My name is Deborah Dillon. I'm a professor of literacy in the Guy Bond on Garen Reading at the University of Minnesota. And I'm here today not to speak either for or against the legislation, but rather to offer my expert opinion about what the legislation offers and also to talk with you about what its potential is in terms of having a research base for impacting reading instruction and achievement in our state. Just as background, my own research area is in the area of K-12 reading preparation for young people, as well as the preparation of teachers. I also work in the area of motivation and engagement, so it was wonderful to hear the testimony of the gentleman from Savage and to see that the research that's related to Barbara Taylor's work on Reading First and Beat the Odds Schools is really making a difference. I just want to talk first about the current situation
in Minnesota related to reading in terms of legislation. Currently, we have legislation that requires that pre-service and practicing K-12 teachers teach reading based on a comprehensive, scientifically based definition of reading that includes the five components of reading. That has been in place, and this legislation is very reasonable, very important, and has been taken up and embraced by reading educators across the state to guide their practice in early childhood through high school. What does the proposed legislation then add to the current legislation? The proposed legislation, from my analysis, seeks to do two things. One, to provide definitions of the five components listed in the current legislation. And these five components and the definitions that have been provided for you in the legislation were basically highlighted in the 2001 report of the National Reading Panel, but are components that have been in the research literature for many years prior to that. And this National Reading Panel report is used pervasively in the preparation of teachers and then also in professional development for teachers, and many of you have probably seen it. It's this hefty document, well used by teacher educators. Secondly, the proposed legislation offers, or it did at one time, a substantial deletion of existing terminology such as balanced approach and inserting other terms such as direct instruction and replicated. And much of that has really been addressed through modifications that have currently been made in the House version, which I think is very admirable. There is one word that I think we need to be mindful of that's still in the version that exists today, and that is the term replicable. That particular term is not used appropriately based on the research literature, and so I would just offer that there is a much better term that the federal government is using, and certainly reading researchers such as myself are using. It was proposed by our Assistant Secretary of Educational Research, Russ Whitehurst, and that particular term is evidence-based. And I've provided you with a handout to show you where that actually emanated from and how it's supported by scientifically-based research as well as other research, and why that's a much more acceptable term if in fact that would be appropriate to make. And then last, the proposed legislation, as you know, requires an assessment of reading knowledge for pre-service teachers at the early childhood through elementary levels. I should note that there is nothing in the current legislation that addresses the issue of high expectations, which we've heard so much about today. But I do want you to know that teacher preparation programs and certainly professional development programs in our state do address that, particularly in the area of Reading First and other important programs. So let me just talk briefly about now each one of those. What about the five definitions of reading? Some might argue that placing...
Excuse me, Dr. Dillon, we're about 6 minutes away from...
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Some might argue that placing those definitions in the legislation is useful, and some might argue that it isn't. What does research say? From a research standpoint, I can't find any evidence that would support providing the definitions in terms of leading to improved reading performance of students. And that's what I looked at as the bottom line in terms of what might be helpful in the legislation. Instead, what I did find research to support is the new reading standards for the Board of Teaching. And those particular standards have more probability of explicating those five components of reading and influencing high-quality reading instruction. Further, I think we need to be mindful that legislative language can quickly become dated and may accidentally limit or restrict our ability to respond to new research and evidence as it becomes available. I also want to offer that there is so much more than the five components of reading that is necessary to develop teachers in their ability to really work with students. If we want to develop critical readers who can compete in our digital world, we have to go beyond the minimum of only the five components, which are absolutely necessary, but there is much more that needs to be required to prepare teachers for our diverse population, as you've heard so much about from other speakers.
And then what about assessing teachers' knowledge and skills about reading? Does the legislative assessment of reading knowledge lead to raising student achievement levels? Again, there is no direct research that shows that requiring a reading assessment will improve students' reading scores in a state. That said, assessing teachers' knowledge and skills related to the new reading standards of the Board of Education, as you've, or the Board of Teaching, as you've heard, is a necessary and byproduct of the process that's already in place. It's a form of accountability that's very important. Reading educators understand this, and they actually support this form of accountability. We know that data will show us whether new teachers and practicing teachers are operating at a particular knowledge base that they need to be effective with students. Some might argue that the proposed legislation is redundant with what the Board of Teaching processes already has in place. Some others might argue that it is the stick in the carrot or stick analogy of how you affect change in teachers' practices or in the ways that higher education reading professors are preparing teachers. What I would offer is that research shows that when high-quality standards are developed to guide teachers in effective ways to teach reading, this is a more powerful stick than mandates or legislation, particularly when educators have participated in the development of the standards, which is what has happened in this case in Minnesota. Last that I want to share with you is, I think, important current work that has been ongoing and is going on right now that I think can really address concerns that underlie this proposed legislation. And all of these efforts are grounded in research that indicates that they have a great probability of affecting change in how teachers are prepared and continue to grow in their knowledge of how to teach reading in our state. First of all, as Karen Ballmer noted, reading educators have been concerned about the Board of Teaching standards for reading teachers for many years, and in fact, educators approached Karen several years ago noting that the standards were outdated and that considerable research has taken place and that we needed to infuse new standards with this research. So this process in partnership with the Board of Teaching began several years ago, was initiated by reading educators, and in fact reading educators are the primary authors of the new reading standards, which are very detailed and comprehensive. We've run these past experts in the field nationwide. We know that they're high quality, and what's really great about them is that they provide a trajectory of what new teachers need to know all the way through practicing and expert teachers. This is the real power of the Board of Teaching standards. They were developed by the very reading professionals and teacher educators that will use them. And because of that, they will be taken up with enthusiasm and fidelity. And in fact, they already have been. One of your other handouts indicates that when higher ed institutions work together on reading preparation content, they can provide content that's more consistent and of high quality across teacher preparation institutions. And as you'll note, we started this summer a consortium of about 28 higher ed institutions who are now working together, meeting across this school year and will be next, to take the Board of Teaching reading standards, which we've already begun to use, and we are using those to infuse new syllabi and new teacher preparation components to our current coursework. This series, called the Minnesota Literacy Teacher Educators Workshop Series, is based on an experiment that was funded by the Bush Foundation, where four universities actually did come together, revised their syllabi in very similar ways, and created assessments and assignments that are in coherence with each other.
Ms. Thillo, we're going to have to wrap it up because we're about to run out of time. I do apologize for that. Obviously, we need more than 90 minutes often to cover the issues that we must cover. But I do appreciate, I apologize for cutting you off. Representative Norton, there were two other individuals, Ms. Thompson and I believe Representative Depke also had a constituent. We are at the adjournment time. Unfortunately, my apologies to the two other members who wish to testify. This issue will no doubt, this won't be the end of this issue. My understanding is that this bill is in the Senate bill, and there will certainly be opportunities, ongoing opportunities, I suspect, as we go to conference committee with that bill, to continue to engage the public and to have public discussions on this. But Representative Norton, I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
I will, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you very much for being allowed to present this bill. I think it's an important bill. As you heard from the Board of Teaching and some of the testifiers, so I know some that have been kind of the chief proponents of this haven't had an opportunity to speak, but I think what they would tell you is this legislation is meant to support the work of the Board of Teaching and rulemaking that's occurred. We have worked very hard to try to address the concerns of MACI and many of the other organizations. And I can tell you from the teachers in my district who have had some of this training, they didn't know what the teachers say, I didn't know what I didn't know until I went through this training. And I think we heard that from the gentleman from Savage as well. So I would hope that as we move forward, this committee and others, as we get into conference committee, will consider this particular version as you negotiate with the Senate. And very much would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Thank you for all the testifiers on this bill. At this point, House File 1080 will be laid over on the table. Is that the right? Yeah. And with that, members, we will not meet again until April 21st. Please look out for notices in regards to that meeting. With that, this committee stands adjourned.